some dangerous large carnivore out there.
Yeah, I saw that bird get a young deer off the road from a mile away.
And it was just about getting dark, and we started panicking, running down the bridge, not really having any clue what was throwing rocks in our vicinity, good-sized rocks. And I stopped long enough to get a 357 out of my backpack and looked back, and that's when I saw it. I saw one.
A week, the town of Defiance was being harassed by a werewolf. And it's actually attacked two railroad workers, killed livestock. You know, just a lot of weird stuff that was going on.
Sunday evening, Monster Xers. This is Gunnar Monson, host of the Monster X radio program, along with my good friend, Shane Hardcore Corson. Shane, how are you this afternoon?
Doing well, Gunnar. Doing well. Enjoying the this nice, relaxing Pacific North Coast or North weather, where we're getting some rain up here, and just enjoying the atmosphere on this Sunday evening.
Yeah, the weather is supposed to get a little nasty this weekend or tonight. A lot of wind and high waves stuff out on the Oregon coast. So if for some reason the power goes out while we're on, I'm sure that Shane will continue on without me. So you went out and spent some time out by Mount Hood this weekend. How'd that go?
I did. I went out with a good buddy and fellow Tillamook and Aluminum Project member, Larry Turner. We were him and Hong as to go towards Mount Hood or the coast. Well, the coast tends to get a little bit more rain than does, say, Mount Hood. And looking at the weather charts and patterns, I thought it best to head up that way. And I hadn't been up there in a couple months anyway. So, and we luckily had a good window of dry weather, very cold weather. It was in the teens, early morning, but good weather. Overall, it was just it was a fun trip up there. We had, some possible activity up there. We were setting up our tents and stuff, and we were just below the snow line. Just below the snow line. And we were getting some weird and odd vocals coming, a little distance away. We were both hearing them, not jumping to conclusions. Not what we do. And so we decided to set up some audio and stuff right away. And as the evening progressed, it was off and on, and we were just, we did a little hiking around, looked around, surveying and whatnot. And it wasn't until, called it early night, I think we went to bed between 10:30 and 11. Kind of early night for us, but we were both beat from the week, and both tired. And unfortunately for me, I didn't hear a whole lot. I woke up to some sort of vocal of some sort from something, and I couldn't tell you what it was. But Larry had heard a lot of stuff going on, and he described it the next morning. He said there were some good knocks, some very primate-like sounds coming from around us, not necessarily right on top of us, but in the general vicinity. And that area up there is known for some of these things, but specifically the knocks and the rock clanking and stuff like that. And we did do some stuff up there too, because I wanted to entice something in. You know, we had seen a nice buck up in this area, you know, and some deer and stuff. And so I wanted to kind of entice something in. And I a lot of times act like a real loud, happy, go get 'em camper. You know, I don't necessarily do Bigfoot vocals. I do just human vocals to entice something in. You know, whether that played a part or not, I'm not sure. Larry did some really cool duck vocalizations that I was impressed with. But anyways, we didn't see anything, so I can't say what we had going on up there was Bigfoot. But it was just with some of these vocals and stuff, and we're still going through the audio. We got loads of audio to go through, and some of it's pretty neat. But, you know, we also – the funny thing was we're up there, and we did – the next morning we found this campsite that had been – it looked like it was abandoned. There was a huge tarp, you know, a huge tarp. You know, we're talking like a $40, $50 tarp tied from tree to tree. We found a tent that was smashed down, a blow-up mattress, you know, for a tent that was deflated and outside the tent, some camping forks and stuff. And down the road, we found some peel-out marks. And it was just weird to see all the stuff. We found socks there and some little bit of fishing gear. And it was just like somebody had... took off real quickly. We didn't see any scuffle marks or nothing. It's just weird that somebody would leave all that stuff there. You know, some of it, you know, the tent looked nice. It was missing its rib part of it, you know, the connectors, the rib part of it. And the stakes, there was a couple of stakes laying around. But that was rather odd, you know. Either you have some people that encountered some horrible weather and just wanted to get the heck out of there. You got some people out there, you know, up to some nefarious affairs, just, you know, leaving their trash, even though some of it looked rather expensive trash. Or maybe possibly they were scared out of there. I don't know. We were trying to come up with an answer. There was, you know, but there was nothing to really figure out from there other than...
No giant footprints.
No. The ground up there in this area, we were just below the snow line. It was wet, but it's your top up coniferous. You know, you got pine needles everywhere and stuff. It would be really hard to find any impression. So we didn't. We did look, but we didn't find anything. And we were camping right next to a stream up there, and so we'd look for impressions around the stream and the bed area around there, but with nothing. But overall, it's a fun trip. It was pretty. Like I said, it got really cold. We had a nice fire going. We got really cold, but the camping experience overall was just fun, and you know, the audio stuff is neat. But I don't, you know, we didn't see a Bigfoot, you know, make those sounds and whatnot. But the knocks and stuff that Larry had heard, and we're hoping it's on the recorders. We're still piling through it, and some of the more primate-like sounds that he was hearing. Apparently, I hope it's on the audio. We did get some neat things like some ooh, ah-ahs, you know, what the heck that was. Didn't sound like a barn owl to me, but who knows, you know, we're going to look, you know, we started looking at it visually on the visualizer and stuff, and it's just neat, you know, but fun weekend out.
Great. Sounds like a good time. Sorry I missed it, but yeah, that's always fun to get out and then have some interesting stuff happen. And then there's the long process of going through audio and stuff, and you know, like you said, looking at it on. So
yeah, yeah, well, very time consuming, but fun.
Yes, it is. So a couple. I'll remind folks that you can pick up Sasquatch Coffee at www.squatchcoffee.com. Time to order gift baskets for Christmas, and we've got free shipping through the month of December for gift baskets. So check that out. I want to thank, we have a contest basically going on, a membership drive on our Facebook page, and I want to thank our members for pitching in and adding new members like crazy, and including our guest today, Tyler Bounds, who added, I think, like 120 of his Bigfoot friends to the Monster X group. So thanks, Tyler. And we just, our membership just crossed like 6,100. So growing in leaps and bounds. I think we've added about 3,000 people in the last couple months. So So it's been fun to watch. So appreciate everybody's support and keep moving forward. So, and we're giving away Bigfoot bling at different milestones. So I know that Bono Russell won our first Bigfoot bling, which was Sasquatch Coffee, and then Liz won a copy of the Bigfoot edition of Newsweek, so which I had the opportunity to go through and review this weekend. Found interesting. So, Shannon, are you still there?
I am still here. Are you still there?
All right. Hold on just a sec. I'm going to bring our guest on. I just need to determine which number is Tyler's.
Yeah, we got quite a few 360 area codes in there. Well, hopefully,
we'll take a stab here.
A stab in the dark.
Hey, Tyler?
Yes, sir.
Oh,
Mr.
Bang.
Tyler Bounds.
It is Tyler Bounds. You know, I'm doing all right. It's been a productive day doing chores around the house, Christmas lights, cleaning out the gutters, bottling beer, you know, boring stuff like that.
So, for Tyler, for the people on Monster X that don't know who Tyler Bounds is.
Wait, who doesn't know who Tyler Bounds is? What? There's no one out there that doesn't know who I am. Are you kidding me?
I don't. This Shane here, I have no idea who you are.
Okay, for the uninitiated and Shane. My name is Tyler Bounds. I live in the Great Pacific Northwest, currently in Olympia, Washington. And, you know, I've been a Bigfoot nerd since I was a little teeny tiny kid. And, you know, I went on a hike with my grandfather back in the day when I was 4 or 5 years old and saw a couple something. And he cast those footprints and we took him back to his ranch and he put those footprints up against the other dozen or so footprints he already had. So I was always interested in what that was, not really knowing that it wasn't supposed to exist. You know, I just thought it was another, you know, woodland critter. And, you know, then I'd watch $6 Million Man hang out with Sasquatch and they'd go fight crime together and throw styrofoam boulders at the bad guys. And my mom used to tell me that I would watch, you know, Land of the Lost, which was my favorite show ever, still my favorite show ever. And the little Chaka caveman guy, I would tell my mom that, you know, that's what I saw when I was with my grandpa, that I saw Chaka. And, you know, so that she would always remind me that I would say that. And, you know, and that just led me to investigating Bigfoot stuff, spending a lot of time in that section of the library, you know, the 001 section, you know, UFOs and unicorns and lake monsters and Bigfoots and ghosts and that just kind of blossomed into making me the weirdo I am today. And and you know, it continued that way until 2008, I believe, or maybe it was 2007, and I went on a BFRO expedition. And which is the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization. I went on a expedition, thought it was the greatest thing ever. All these Bigfoot experts out there that knew everything about Bigfoot, and they could hit a tree and something up on the mountain, it would hit back. And I just thought, oh my gosh, this is amazing. There's Bigfoots, you know, not behind every bush, but pretty much every other bush. And then I, you know, started going to more expeditions and then started leading expeditions and then became a BFRO member, investigator, researcher. And, you know, spent a lot of time in the woods in the Pacific Northwest, all over Washington and Oregon and Northern California and Idaho, and just running all over the place, chasing every shadow, chasing every report, hanging out with a bunch of like-minded weirdos out in the woods. And then that led to I got this little gig on a television program called Finding Bigfoot that's on some channel. I don't remember. It's like basic cable channel, I think. And I did that for like 5 years and traveled around the country with the cast members and the crew, and basically did what I was doing in the Pacific Northwest around the rest of the country. And I did that for quite a while, since 2011 until this year was the last time I worked on the show. And then supposedly the show got canceled, but then lo and behold, it got picked up for another 8 episodes, or at least 8 hours of quality television. And so they're out filming right now. Actually, I think they just wrapped, or they're doing one more before they break for Christmas. Or maybe 2 more. I don't know. I'm not in that loop anymore, so don't really know. Don't really care. But that's my story, and I'm sticking to most of it.
Well, Tyler, it sounds like, you know, your grandfather played a huge role in getting you on this journey.
Yep.
And yeah, I mean, fantastic. I mean, did your grandfather consider himself a researcher, or was he just like interested in the subject? I mean, he went to the extent of casting tracks. I mean, that's pretty impressive. You know, I mean, we're talking, you know, when you were a kid, and that's a while ago. So.
Yeah. Well, he had a ranch down in Southern Oregon, down in Ashland, Oregon, had this big 5,000-acre ranch. And my grandfather, he was a bit of a adventurer. He was a gunsmith and a knifesmith, made, you know, his own guns, sold his own guns, that sort of thing. He, you know, was a very avid hunter and explorer, hiker, just kind of a all-around badass, you know. And I can imagine him being in Southern Oregon in the late 60s when all that stuff was going on in Northern California, Bluff Creek, Willow Creek area, that he would take a keen interest in something like that. I didn't know anything about it at the time, but, you know, looking back on it, I think that, he was probably running around those logging roads at the same time as, you know, Roger and Bob, Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin, for everybody who doesn't know, and Rene DeHinden and John Green and, you know, the crews and,
yeah,
you know, every other guy that was down there. I mean, I'm sure that if he got wind of it, or he would read about it on the newspaper, or, you know, maybe he read about it on the internet, you know, back in 1965 and, he Googled it. Sitting in his on the ranch, Googling, but yeah, it totally, you know, looking back on it and knowing what I know now, it totally does not surprise me that that he would have an interest in that. And, you know, he passed away not long after that. I was, I think probably 10, so I never really got a chance to talk to him about that. But talking to my grandmother, his widow, and, you know, tell her, yeah, I'm working on a TV show about Bigfoot. Oh, Bigfoot, that old guy, is he still running around? Man, your grandpa used to go look for him. Oh, where at? Oh, I don't know. He would take off and he'd be gone forever. I can't believe you're still looking for that old guy. You know, he's been around forever. And, you know, then I try to school my grandmother, like, Grandma, there's more than one. And, oh, no. You know, So apparently he did have an interest, and he was, I don't know the extent, but, you know, it was just a hop, skip, and jump across the border, and, you know, to get down into Humboldt and the Trinity Alps and Northern California and all that, and, you know, Cave Junction. So southwestern Oregon and that whole area. So it totally doesn't surprise me that he would be into that. And he was probably down there locked and loaded with a horse full of, or a trailer full of horses, not a horse full of trailers. And, you know, probably doing what, you know, he did on his ranch, was ride around and, you know, blow away deer and ground squirrels and, you know, anything else. And I mean, he had trophies, you know, he hunted bear, hunted elk, hunted deer, hunted cougars. And, you know, he's definitely, that's where my, definitely my love of venison, even though I'm a vegetarian these days, but man, some good venison, and I pretty much repeal my vegetarian license for one meal and deal with the gastrointestinal aftermath later. But so yeah, it's yeah, that's what lit a spark, and you know, and now here I am today. So
yeah,
watch what you wish for, man. Watch what you wish for.
Right. You know, I was going to say, Ashland, you know, when I was first, I drove up from San Diego up to Portland area up here originally, and I passed through Ashland, and I was impressed with the amount of wilderness down there and how close it was to, I mean, really Northern California. But your grandfather, you know, how many people like this, you know, the original folk out there that were doing stuff like this that you'll never hear about. I mean, had I not bumped into you, Tyler, and know you, I never would have probably heard about your grandfather's, you know, history and story and stuff. And then I believe there's a lot more out there like that that just took up an interest. But, you know, we're in this day and age, you know, you got Facebook and all this online stuff and social media. Back then you didn't have anything. And so it really was just an interest of oneself to do this, you know. And that, to me, is just killer. And what a killer, you know, way to go to get interested in the subject for you was to, you know, witness your grandfather doing this stuff and taking an interest in it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it was complete luck of the draw. I mean, we went down there for a family reunion, and he was a Boy Scout leader. You know, he was my dad's Boy Scout leader. My dad was my Boy Scout leader. You know, it was kind of a family thing. And but this was way before I was in Scouts or anything. But we went down there, and he was double booked, had to go on a hike somewhere. I don't even know where it was. I don't know if it was Northern California. I don't know if it was, like, around Cave Junction, Grants Pass, Crater Lake. Like I said, I was 4, maybe 5 years old when I did this, just teeny tiny little kid. And you know, had my parents not been like, Tyler, why don't you go with him? And yeah, okay, you know, I want to go hang out with the big scouts. Yeah, cool. You know, had that not happened, then, you know, who knows? I mean, that's just one of those kind of life changing, you know, those forks. And like, you know, I could have gone any other direction, and, you know, I could totally be, you know, I'm a concert pianist right now. You know, who knows? I have no idea. But that's but it is interesting that, yeah, how many other outdoorsmen, loggers, hunters, you know, back in that time, you know, heard about those reports, read about, you know, the stuff in the newspaper, and, you know, decided, hey, I'm going to go look for this. You know, I can find it, you know, if these, you know, dumb loggers aren't going to find it. These dumb cowboys aren't going to find it. I'm going to go find it. And, you know, it probably happened hundreds of times. You know, people just self-styled adventurers, big game hunters, you know, I'm going to go get rich. I'm going to go blow away this monkey. And, you know, to some extent, it's kind of still the same today. Just there's, I guess, probably more of us and less guns, hopefully. But, you know, it's just kind of a different generation and more information. And you know, had it just been that one, oh, that old man, you know, had it just, you know, would have just been gone forever. And, you know, then what would we all be doing, you know, There'd be no Monster X. There'd be no Finding Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. There'd be no, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's weird how things turn out.
Yeah, no, it's crazy strange. You also mentioned, Tyler, and I know the backstory on this, but for those listening, they're going to ask, you know, your grandfather took these casts. Where did those casts end up? Did you ever locate them or look for them?
When my grandfather passed away, we went down to Southern Oregon and back to Ashland and got, you know, basically, you know, loading up some family things. My dad wanted some certain guns. He wanted his dad's guns, you know, the guns that he made for himself, not the ones that he, you know, sold. I mean, there were hundreds and hundreds of guns in that basement, but my dad wanted, you know, like a certain four or five guns, some other things. And all I could think about all the way down there was, I want those Bigfoot casts. I want those Bigfoot. So I remembered seeing them. I remembered afterwards seeing them. And, you know, I'd be running around the ranch, you know, sticking my hand down every gopher hole trying to find a rattlesnake, which wasn't too bright. But apparently I did get lucky a couple times. Lucky as in not getting bit, and lucky as in, Daddy, look what I have, and, you know, fully live rattlesnake in my hands. And so I guess that was my thing back in the day. But when I went back down there, they weren't there. I looked all over the place. I asked my grandmother, and she's like, oh, they're out there somewhere. They're where they always have been. I'm like, no, they aren't. And I mean, I've been, you know, all over. I looked all over that place. And even I was just down there last August for, unfortunately, my grandmother's funeral. And I went back out to the ranch, and all the outbuildings are gone. The old ranch house is gone. It's all, you know, it all got torn down and razed. And, but I was still, I mean, I would find like little bits of metal here and there, and like old bits of, I mean, pieces of whatever. And I'm like, man, if I could just find some chunks of plaster, you know,
yeah.
And maybe I could get enough and, you know, with enough super glue, put something back together. And I mean, even, yeah, you know, 30 something years later, I'm still down there like, man, maybe I'll just get lucky, you know, one last time out of the ranch. And, but, you know, no luck. But I've definitely kicked myself many times for not, you know, taking the opportunity and, I guess, you know, either asking my grandfather when he was still alive or asking my grandmother, like, hey, can, you know, those casts, can I have them? You know, because not really recognizing the importance of them at the time. Like, you know, are they super rare, or does everybody have a dozen Bigfoot footprint casts, you know, sitting around their house? I have no idea. And, but even, I mean, Cliff from the TV show, and I have lamented several times. He's like, man, if you just had those footprint casts, you know, that would, you know, that's a dozen more to add to the database and to the collection, and, you know, known footprints. And even if we didn't know where they came from, when they were cast, it, you know, it still adds knowledge. So,
yeah.
I've been pretty sad about not picking those up when I had the chance, but,
yeah.
You know,
well, the search for those casts sounds much like the search for Bigfoot in general, where people have an initial sighting and they yearn for another one but can't get one. You know, your search for these casts sounds so similar.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, or any other piece of evidence, like, yeah, I have some hair. Oh, where's it at? Well, it's an envelope around here somewhere. You know, I'll let you know when I find it. Like, oh, really? You know, okay. I drove an hour to get here, but hey, that's all right. You know, whatever.
Right. And you've done a lot of traveling, obviously. I think your nickname is called the Wild Man, you know, Tyler, a.k.a. Wild Man Bounds, for obvious reasons. You're a hiking fool, and you've done some really cool stuff and traveled all around the country. And, you know, being involved with the show Finding Bigfoot has really sent you all over the place, and you've met a lot of interesting people. What are you, you know, with the show Finding Bigfoot, you know, how exactly did you get involved with that? I know you spoke a little bit about it, but What was your experience there, and how did you get involved with it exactly?
I got involved with it because a couple years before the show happened, I was part of a group that was picked to take a gentleman out into the woods for a few days for a different TV show. His name was Bob Saget. He's some comedian or actor or something.
I think I've heard of him.
We went out in the woods with him for a few days, and the production company that was working with him is the same production company that finally picked up Finding Bigfoot. So that first season, we had some of the same camera guys, same producers that were there when we were filming with Bob out on the Olympic Peninsula in Washington. And, you know, there's Cliff was there, Bobo was there, Matt Moneymaker, Derek Randles, you know, and several other, Paul Graves, Tommy Amarone, you know, all the usual suspects. And I got invited, myself and Matt Pruitt and a few other people. And you know, I didn't make it onto TV. I did some stuff, and they edited me out. And at the time, I was like, man, how dare they? But, you know, now, years later, it's like, man, there's so much stuff that gets cut out. You know, now that I know kind of the ins and outs of the TV biz, it's, you know, I don't really care. But, so yeah, that happened. And then there was kind of a casting call for Finding Bigfoot. And I went and helped, I went and filmed some stuff with this, this woman named Renee Holland. And she was going to be this skeptic scientist. And I was going to be the believer. And so we filmed some stuff, sent that out. And then they decided to change. Originally, it was going to be like 8 people on the team, I think. And so I sent my little video thing, and they said, you know, we're going to switch it up. We're going to cut it down. You know, thanks, but no thanks. But, hey, can you give us the information for that girl in your video? And I'm like, yeah. And then Matt Moneymaker had met her before, and he was pushing for her. He's like, oh, yeah, yeah, she's a field biologist. She'd be a great addition to the show. She'd be, you know, make a great punching bag for 3 guys to gang up on every episode. And so that's, you know, lo and behold, you know, Renee got on the show, and I didn't, not in that way. And, thank goodness, kind of. It's amazing that they, you know, they get to do, we all get to do what we got to do on that show, but seeing the headaches and the trials and tribulations they have to go through and kind of be the puppets sometimes, sometimes I'm like, man, I'm so glad I didn't get this gig. So glad. You know, the money they make is nice, and that would be nice, but at the same time, you know, I got to do pretty much the same things that they got to do without having to be on the beck and call of, you know, their Hollywood masters. So it all worked out for the best, or worked out just fine. You know, I'm happy. I got to travel and adventure and explore and experience. And that's kind of how the show started. And then I was slated to work on an episode here in Washington. We were going to go to do an episode around Silver Star Mountain with Randy Chase, who took a photograph of something on top of Silver Star Mountain. And and you guys know Randy, and probably a lot of other, Randy's probably listening right now. Hey, Randy. And I ended up kind of through a weird set of circumstances. I ended up in Georgia the same time that they were filming, I think, the second episode, you know, in a linear line, the second episode. They had gone to, yeah, exactly. I think they had filmed in North Carolina or South Carolina, So this was basically, the Georgia episode was the second episode that was filmed, you know, not aired on TV because, you know, everything's filmed out of order. And but so I ended up there and I just happened, you know, I went to go visit my buddy Matt Pruitt. He was working on that episode. And then I got involved and, hey, can I just hang out, you know, when you guys are filming? And they're like, who is this guy? You know, he's supposed to be on the Washington episode. Why is he in Georgia? What is he doing here? And I don't quite understand, but okay, yeah. So I would go tag along if they go film. I'd run around the woods, do my thing. And at one point in time, I found some, they were investigating some footprints that a duck hunter found. And there was photographs, but by the time they got there, they had been ran over by motorcycles and horses and people and what have you. But, you know, I was running around doing my thing, you know, running through the woods and staying out of the camera and just, you know. And I found two footprints that were the same size as the footprints that were in the photographs as per Cliff's investigation. You know, he figured out, oh, here's this same rock. This rock is this big by, you know, using science and math. And, you know, I can figure out how big this footprint is and, you know, and they're this far apart. And I found two footprints off to the side a little bit further down the hill that were the same size and that were the same distance apart. So, you know, it was a crazy, crazy thing. We had to totally change the whole episode, which the producers were kind of pissed about, like, no, we have Bobo slated to go eat, you know, 5 bratwursts in an hour. We don't have time. We can't. We're like, no, we have to. I mean, Cliff was adamant, like, no, we have to cast these footprints. These are footprints. This is why we're out here. And they're like, fine, whatever, you know. We'll scratch the bratwurst eating contest, I guess, if, you know, if we really have to look for Bigfoot stuff. And Cliff and I, everybody else left, and Cliff and I camped up there on that hillside until, I mean, for hours. I mean, it was way past dark. We're like, we're not leaving him. I mean, they have to set. They have to, you know, they have to set before we can dig him out of the ground. We're not just going to pour him and walk away and hope they'll be here tomorrow or the next day or whenever we get back up here. You know, you guys go do whatever. We're going to camp out here. And so it was a big deal. It was a big deal for the show. And on the strength of that happening, that became the debut episode of Finding Bigfoot, you know, because they actually found evidence, you know, and it was a great episode. And then after that, it basically became Tyler Bounds, go find his footprints. Tyler Bounds, go find his Sasquatch. Tyler Bounds. So I pretty much became the golden child after that. Like, Tyler, go find this stuff. Like, well, it doesn't quite happen like that, but, you know, hey, you guys are signing my paycheck, so yes, I will go find footprints. I'll go find, you know, that's what I'm here to do. So after working, you know, we did the Silver Star episode, and then, you know, that was a short season. They got picked up for more seasons, and then my producer called me up, and, like, we want you to be a permanent crew member. You're going to be the camping guy and the Bigfoot guy, and basically, you know, we're going to pay you to go travel around the country with everybody and go camp for 3 days a week and go, you know, look for Bigfoot, set up audio recorders, set up trail cameras, go, you know, into the deeps and without, you know, any camera guys around, no crew, no production, no Hollywood, just me and whoever I'm camping with. So it was pretty unique experience to be able to do that and that they would trust me to, you know, put a camera in my hand, trust me to go get the footage that they wanted and make good TV, which I have never made TV before. I don't even watch TV. So, which kind of pissed them off. So I was I had liberty to make the TV show that I would want to watch if I did want to watch TV. So, and they liked what I did and kept bringing me back. And, you know, they, here's a camera, here's your stuff, here's a car, here's the cast member you're going to camp with, go, see you in 3 days. And so it was a pretty awesome experience, pretty awesome opportunity, and, I mean, basically the best job in the universe.
Yeah, you know, I mean, your role, I guess, was labeled, you know, outdoor technician. But Tyler, I've been involved with a couple of the Find a Bigfoot shows, and I've seen you at work and what you do, and you did frickin' everything. I mean, you were all over the place. Trying to pin you down or find you sometimes was impossible. You did everything, a little bit of everything, a lot of the technical stuff, no doubt. But you were out there days on end in the middle of nowhere, because you're good at that. You just are.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And after, not knowing anything about the TV business, like season one, like, you guys want what? What's this? What's that? I'm a Bigfoot guy, and he basically hired me to set up tents and make sure that Bobo, ties his shoes right. And
that's an important job.
It is almost as important as keeping his belt buckled as well, which is, believe me, it's sometimes I'm underpaid. But, at the beginning it was, you film for 3 days, and then sometimes they're like, okay, you're done, sit in the hotel for the next 4 days. I'm like, no way, dude, no, I want to go out. Well, we're not going to pay you. I'm like, I don't care, but I don't want to sit in the hotel. When you guys are out looking for Bigfoots, you guys are out in the woods, you guys are out doing stuff at night, I want to go. Don't leave me in the hotel. That's not. And then, as soon as I would start doing something like help set up camera equipment, okay, well, we'll pay you for today. Sweet. And that only went on for a few episodes until they're like, we're just going to put you on salary, dude, because you're doing everything. I ended up driving the U-Haul, this U-Haul from coast to coast. Half a dozen times, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of miles in a stinking U-Haul. I'd be lucky if it had something besides AM radio. And as I learned more and did more and more seasons, I knew more technical stuff. They'd bring me on as what they call a fixer, which is basically like an assistant producer or associate producer kind of for each episode, especially if it's an area where I'm familiar with, Pacific Northwest, basically. I knew places, I knew people, I knew sighting locations, I knew witnesses. And where to procure, you need horses, you need four-wheelers, you need dune buggies. Yeah, I can, I know people, I can make this happen. Mm-hmm. So, but then also as time went on, I would pick up a lot of slack in other areas and go interview witnesses, go to city council meetings, to state our case. And, this is why we want a permit to film in your private forest reserve, and it worked and it always worked. And, and sometimes I'm, they would call me Lost in Bounds on the TV show because they would lose something. And Tyler Moneymaker dropped a walkie talkie on top of the mountain somewhere last night. We need you to go find it. Well, where'd he drop it? I have no idea. Oh, sweet. Okay. But, I would go find it. And hey, I found the walkie talkie. Oh, sweet. Awesome. You find footprints, you can find walkie-talkies, you can find witnesses, you can find, this and that, whatever. And so that kind of became part of my role. And, and then in addition to, we need you to go pick up the catering order at such and such a time. We need you to go, because when I wasn't camping, that's, 3 days out of 7 or 8 days. And then I'm basically just a production assistant and do whatever. And, whatever it took. They'd send me up in an airplane or a helicopter with a camera and fly over herds of elk and, get the elk, go up in a tree with cliffs in the middle of nowhere and 100 feet up on a porta wedge with a camera and the therm. And, whatever had to happen. And a lot of times, Tyler, are you comfortable with doing this? I'm like, not really, but I'm going to do it anyways. And, so it was always, whether I'm up in the tops of trees, out in swamps, going down into caves, my producers, would give me a job, and they know that, with my kind of adventurous spirit, I take it on, and, you know, do whatever I could and not complain about it.
Right, right. I want to backtrack a little bit. I remember I was involved, and you had contacted and asked a few people if they wanted to be involved with the show. It was Bigfoot against Oregon against Washington, basically episode, and we were up in the Skookum area, and I was probably in the back of the pack following you driving this U-Haul, and I could barely keep up. I was like, this guy's a madman. You were just starting. But that was just a fond memory I have, because I actually didn't make it to the site, and we all made it there safe and sound and everything and had a great time and a good episode. Mm-hmm. But that goes to speak of the wild man. You were on a mission, and you fall through with it, and that was a fun time, let me tell you.
That was a great episode.
Yeah, but, you know, do you have, speaking of great episodes, do you have a particular episode or area that you really had that stands out to you as, you know, the best time you've ever had or the best evidence you've ever found out on Wild Dune finding Bigfoot?
Well, I mean, I've got to do a lot of things on the show that are what I like to call the Bigfoot bucket list. I mean, I've been out in Boggy Creek in a kayak with Renee, you know, for 3 days. I got to pitch my tent right on the same spot where, what's his name, Smokey Crabtree, where his cabin was, where the bottle tree was, you know, from that movie that I watched a bajillion times when I was a little kid, and Boggy Creek Monster. And, you know, and then years and years later, I'm there. I'm there in that spot, in that exact same spot, and like, wow, this is my life. This is my job. This is awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, stuff like that, you know, going like the Mogollon Rim down in Arizona, you know, I'd always heard about the Mogollon Monster, you know, going out, man, there's been so many, so many great places that I've been with the show. You know, I've been out to, oh man, I'm going to space the guy's name out, but, Glenn Thomas site down in Oregon, where the big piles of rocks are up on the hill, you know, the big pit
up towards Mount Hood. Yeah.
And, you know, so going to places like that, you know, places I had only read about, you know, in books when I was a little kid, or hearing about later on, and then you know, here's where you're going to go, Tyler, and you know, this is what you're going to do, like, sweet, and oh wow, and I'm getting paid to do this bonus, and you know, and I've been, you know, all sorts of crazy places. You know, some are better than others. No, I can't vouch for, you know, I don't want to hurt any feelings out there, but, you know, Connecticut wasn't all that squatchy. You know, but then I've been to other places, you know, Cliff and I would often, you know, cry on each other's shoulder, like, you know, he and I got sent to Connecticut, you know, sent out in the woods, go camp in Connecticut for 3 days. Well, there's nowhere to go. There's no place. So we ended up having to go to Massachusetts and pretend that that was Connecticut. he and I got sent out in Rhode Island, and, like, you know, there's not much. There's, you know, we were around the Bridgewater Triangle, which is kind of northwest Rhode Island, and some weird things happen around there. But, you know, you're still kind of limited space. And, you know, and then other times I'd be, you know, sent in the Sierras with Moneymaker and Matt Moneymaker, and, you know, and all he wants to do is kind of hang out in the tent and smoke cigarettes, and like, dude, we should go somewhere. Yeah, no, I don't, there's no squatches here. I don't feel it. And like, what? No. So, but you know, on other times, you know, Cliff and I, we got sent into the Pine Barrens of New Jersey, and we're both like, man, you know, we always get the short end of the stick. We get sent to these crappy places. And I'll tell you what, the Pine Barrens, New Jersey, was probably the most wild, crazy, life filled. I mean, there was so much stuff everywhere. There was so much. There's beavers. There's turtles. There's frogs. There's all these pine barren pine snakes that are super duper rare, and birds and deer. And I mean, I've been to every state with the show. I've been to every state except for North Dakota and Maine. And
not Hawaii.
You know.
Did you find any
we have not been to Hawaii yet, but I'm sure Bobo probably has a pig roast luau plan for that episode. I've been to every, not always with the show. I mean, I've been to Alaska, but not with the show. And I've been to Nebraska, but not with the show. And, you know, just passing through or driving to U-Haul or whatever. But, you know, I've been to, you know, Montana. I've been to California, Louisiana. I've been crazy. I mean, places where you think, you know, wild and deep woods and, you know,
you've been everywhere,
remote
man.
Areas. I've been everywhere. And New Jersey was off the hook. It was crazy. And, you know, and this is just one little area. And then it's kind of a reminder, like, you know, there is, even where you think it's going to be kind of urban, you know, it's not that far from the city center. You know, we went up in the top of Fire Tower, and we could see all the way from Atlantic City to the south to the lights of New York to the north, and, I mean, lights of New York City. And we're like, but we're here, and there's bears. We found bear tracks. There's so much stuff. And then, you know, it kind of reminds you, like, you know, this is a habitat where a lot of wildlife lives and exists and gets by just fine. And, yeah, there could be a Bigfoot here or Jersey Devil or, you know, whatever you happen to, you know, be looking for. And, and you know, so it's places like that, you know, where you realize you don't have to be way the heck out. You know, life, nature is going to just kind of keep on keeping on. You know, those snakes and turtles and deer don't care how close they are to New York City. They have no idea. So, but, that, you know, that being said, you know, and coming from the Pacific Northwest, you know, the East Coast, every time I'd be on the East Coast, I was kind of just forlorn and depressed and like, there's no mountains here. There's no, oh, no, we have mountains. Look over there. You know, see those? I'm like, those aren't mountains. What are you talking about? Those aren't mountains. We have trees where I come from taller than those mountains. That's not even, that's nothing. And so it was always nice to cross the Mississippi and head west, and whether it was the Rockies or the Cascades, you know. And the Appalachians, I mean, they have their own. West Virginia was amazing. West Virginia was kind of blew my mind on how rugged and wild that was. But, and, you know, in like upstate New York in the Adirondacks. But there's nothing like the Rockies, and especially nothing like the Cascades. And every time after being in the flatlands or the swamps or something, and then I get to lay eyes on the, you know, on a glacier capped volcano, it was, I mean, I would cry sometimes. There's times I'm flying home, you know, from being 4 months on the road, and I look out my window and there's Mount Rainier and Mount St. Helens. I'm like, oh, yes. Greenery, you know, it can be the dead of winter, you know, in Kansas, the dead of winter is bleak and lame and just dead and windswept and boring. And then, you know, I come back home to Washington, like, yes, evergreens, mountains, ocean. I mean, it's just, it really makes you appreciate, you know, where you're from and coming back home. And, you know, nothing against Kansas, whoever's out there listening from Kansas. You have a lovely state. I'm sure it looks great any time besides December. But you know, anytime I was in a mountainous zone, you know, be it Montana or Idaho or Oregon, I mean, that's where I really felt happiest, I guess. And, you know, and a lot of other, you know, upstate New York, Vermont, you know, every place I went has its own charms, I guess. And, but me being who I am and, you know, just my love for the mountains and topography and actual elevation changes, So it was nice to. It's always nice to be back in the West and in the woods and the mountains and, you know, I guess home. So, I've been all sorts of places. It was really cool, but my heart is still in the Pacific Northwest. So it was always nice to come home.
So Tyler, what was the most compelling evidence that you found while being part of the crew of Finding Bigfoot?
Well, there was the footprints, like I was saying before, that I found in Georgia. And Meldrum looked at those, and he was not impressed. He actually said that they were a bear. And Cliff and I both looked at them and were like, those, I don't think it's a bear, because there is a weird feature on the heel. I guess could be a double, it could be a double imprint, but I don't think so, because each footprint was exactly the same length. They're the same stride. We have the other photos that don't look like bear footprints. And Cliff kind of demurs. He's like, Meldrum is the footprint expert. And I'm like, yeah, but you saw the footprints. I saw the footprints. We've both seen bear footprints. We've both seen human footprints. And he's like, yeah, but, Meldrum. I'm like, well, yeah, Meldrum, okay. He has a PhD, big deal. Who cares? Who cares about his PhD? Cliff has talked to him about it since then, and now Meldrum is a little more on the fence. Jeff Meldrum, for everybody who out there is listening and doesn't know what I'm talking about. There was that. We found interesting imprints, in the snow, but nothing verified. We've, heard crazy things in the woods, have trees pushed over at kind of suspicious times. Somebody puts out a vocalization. A few seconds later, a tree falls. Then we'll wait, and somebody does another call, and then another tree falls, and it's like, okay, that's interesting. as far as evidence, we've plucked hairs off of telephone poles that were 10 feet off the ground, and apparently those got lost somewhere. Animal Planet said that they got lost en route to the laboratory or something like that. You see something like that, like, well, how does hair get, 10 feet up on a telephone pole? And this is where a witness saw a guy who was scratching its back, because these telephone poles have, like, chicken wire stuff wrapped around the bottoms of them for some reason. I'm not sure why. Maybe to keep – I have no idea. But some witnesses saw a Bigfoot scratching its back, basically, on this not a telephone pole, but, like, a power pole. And, Bobo and I went out there and checked it out, and I actually had to sit on Bobo's shoulders to be able to reach high enough. Thank goodness there wasn't a camera running then, to be able to grab those hairs and, pluck them and put them in a sack and, get them back to the home base and whatnot. But as far as, evidence, it's all pretty circumstantial. I mean, I've heard crazy things, had things happen, clicks and clacks and knocks and, faint vocals and, basically just like every other time you go out in the woods with, whether it's by yourself, a group of three, a group of 10, kind of the same thing. And, I often thought that we would have as good a chance, if not better, being myself and one other person, or even, the size of our camera crew isn't that big. There's only like 13 guys, 15 guys on the crew max. And when we go out in the woods at night, there's, we break up into two teams, each you know, two cast members, and then there's three or four people max with them, you know, and we're dark and we're quiet. It's not a bunch of lights. We're, you know, we do everything in the dark. You know, just like any expedition, it's red lights, it's quiet. You know, we're filming TV. You can't have a bunch of people talking and crashing around and breaking branches. It's, you know, it was legit stuff that we did for the show on our night investigations. And, you know, some crazy things happen, but it doesn't always translate to film. You know, we all hear something and, you know, did you get it? I don't think the camera got it. No, this camera isn't set up for that kind of audio. A lot of times I would have a parabolic dish out there following the guys around, and I would walk away from them because they're all walking through dead leaves and doing stuff like that. And it's really, really annoying to have a parabolic and all you can hear is crunch, 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 crunch for hours on end. So I would, like, go away from, you know, the main group, and, you know, more often than not, I would be somewhere else, pointed in a different direction, and then come back, or get a call on the walkie-talkie, like, Tyler, did you hear that? No, wait, you know, to the northeast. Oh, no, I was listening to the southwest. Yeah. I didn't, you know, it's inevitable, you know,
right.
Did you push the, you know, did you put batteries in the audio recorder? Of course. And, oh, no, they're dead. Did you push the button? Of course. Oh, I guess I didn't push that button. I guess I didn't have the trail camera pointed the right direction. I mean, it's, you know, there's always an excuse, but we've all done it. I mean, you know, there's always technical difficulties. There's always, oh, I thought those batteries were good. I guess they weren't. Missed that. No, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Of course. And,
well, Tyler, there was an episode... I think it was back in the early stages of the Finding Bigfoot show, where you possibly hit something. It was the Beast of Gump Hill episode. You talk a little bit about that.
That was in Virginia. That was kind of a freaky night.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take one. I had gone out to go set up bait stations out in the middle of nowhere, kind of western Virginia. And I was given, you know, I had like three trout, two jars of peanut butter, six loaves of bread, three bags of apples, four dozen donuts. I mean, I had all this, it was crazy. And my producer told me, make the biggest Bigfoot bait pile that you can. I mean, no Bigfoot for miles is going to be able to resist this. I'm like, heck yeah, dude. So I went out and made this big, like, food mandala out in the woods. And it was beautiful with apples and bread and peanut butter and fish, beef liver and donuts. And,
yeah.
And then, and it was amazing. It's like, it's one of those things that you know, you kind of want to do, like, on an expedition, like, you know what we should do? We should just make a pile of food 5 feet tall. And, like, yeah, well, we can't afford it. And then, but, you know, of course, Animal Planet can't afford it. So I went out and I put all this powder, this tracking powder that they use, like, forensically, you know, and then you shine a black light on it and you can, you know, see footprints, and the whole deal was Bigfoot's going to come. It's going to take a bunch of this food. Can't help but get the powder on his hands and his feet. It's going to walk away, and we're going to follow it, you know, with these black light flashlights. And I was so proud of myself, and I took hours, made it beautiful and perfect and amazing. And I came back, and I'm like, did you do it? I'm like, yeah, dude, look at these pictures. And then one of the other producers looked at it and was like, no. You were supposed to set up like six or eight different bait stations. We wanted beef liver here, trout here, peanut butter there, bread here. And I'm like, no, that's not, but no, whatever. I'm on the bottom of the totem pole. So even the guy that told me to do that was like, that's not what I said, when that's definitely, you know, I sent him a picture. And he's like, that looks amazing. You know, before I got back to our headquarters at the hotel, and the other producer's like, that's not amazing. That's stupid. And so basically, I had to go back out to the woods and go do all this all over again and go buy $200 more worth of food and go back in the woods, this time at night, you know, because now it's dark because I wasted daylight hours making my big, you know, apparently just a wasted art installation out in the middle of nowhere. And so I went back and set up all my, you know, bread over here, peanut butter over here, did the whole thing, took photos, spread all my tracking powder all over the place. And, you know, and by the time I was done with that, it was like 2 a.m. And so I left cruising down the hill and, you know, because I'm out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it's like coal country, kind of basically like logging roads, but not so much logging because there's not tons of logging there. But, you know, just mountain roads. And I finally got down to pavement, like, oh, sweet. I can finally, you know, drive faster than 25 miles an hour. And it was dark. It was super foggy. And I pulled off this dirt road on the pavement, and I was setting the cruise control on the steering wheel of the rental car I had and, you know, pushing the button, like watching the little speedometer go up from, you know, 40, 42, 44. I'm like, woohoo! Yay, I'm finally get to go back to the hotel. And I looked up, and right then there was something on the center line in the fog, just there, just big there. And I mean, it was 8 feet in front of me, if that, 6 feet in front of me. And I mean, I macked it. There was nothing else. I didn't have any time. And it hit the front of the car. It bashed in my rearview mirror on the driver's side. And then something smacked the top of the car I was driving. And it was like a Dodge minivan. I forget what they're called, but some sort of minivan thing. And I freaked out because it was a big something. I thought it was a person. I totally thought it was a person standing in the middle of the road at 2:30 in the morning, out in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, I wasn't even thinking Bigfoot. I immediately slammed on my brakes, looked in my, you know, because my brake lights illuminate kind of the fog behind me. And I didn't see anything behind me. Immediately turned around. There was nothing in the road. Immediately turned around again and got out. And I started, like, yelling. I was up on the guardrail on the side of the road yelling, like, sorry, mister. you know, because I still thought, you know, I probably just hit some, you know, some drunken moonshiner out middle of nowhere in Virginia. And I was really freaked out. I mean, I was crying. I was like, yeah, please come out, dude. I'll help you. I'll totally help you. And I didn't know what to do. I'm like, God, you know, I hurt somebody, if not killed somebody. And, you know, and after kind of the, you know, several minutes of that kind of shock, then it's like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You know, where am I? And then it's like, no. You know, what are the chances that a Bigfooter working on a Bigfoot show who's out setting up Bigfoot bait stations in a Bigfooty area where there's been a bunch of sightings is going to hit a Bigfoot with his Bigfoot car on his way back to Bigfoot headquarters? And, you know, it's just one of those.
I wouldn't
kind of
want to
ridiculous.
Do the percentages for that, but.
Right.
I'm right. Thinking it's on the high side, but.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, there's kind of that the part of me that doesn't want to admit, like, you know, no, that's not what happened. You know, it's more likely that I hit, yeah, it's 2:30 in the morning in western coal country of Virginia. Yeah, of course it's, you know, some drunken hillbilly out in the, and if you're listening from Virginia, I don't mean anything bad by drunken hillbilly. It's a term of endearment. But, you know, then it just kind of dawns on me, like, you know, something happened. I hit something, and if it was a person, at least, I mean, they wouldn't have ran away. I mean, they'd either be laying in the road, like, hey, what are you doing? Or they'd be, you know, not very far away, hobbling on their busted up leg, like, ugh,
right.
instead of, you know, nothing. And so I finally kind of got my wits about me, and the first thing I did was call up Cliff and told him, you know, and he answered the phone. He's like, dude, it's 3:15 in the morning. You're calling me for one reason, and that's why I'm answering the phone, because something's going on. I'm like, yeah, and I told him, he's like, okay, here's what you do. You know, start your audio recorder and just tell, you know, while it's still fresh in your brain, while everything is, you know, it just happened, you know, recount, you know, go back over it and record all of it, you know, so that, that, you know, you don't get things screwed up later. Like, I don't know what time it was. I don't know where I was, you know. So I made that recording and then, you know, looked around some more and it's finally like, yeah, you know, there's nothing here. By this time, it's super late. I mean, or early, depending on how you look at it. And, you know, drove the 2 hours back to the hotel to sit in the lobby until my producer, who I know wakes up super early every morning to go jogging, would come down through the lobby. I'm like, okay, here's what happened. And no, I wasn't drunk. No, I didn't go off the road. No, I didn't hit a tree. No, I didn't hit a stump. No, I didn't hit. And he's just like, okay, you know, wait, what are you telling me? And, but even then I never said, dude, I hit a Bigfoot. You know, I mean, there's definitely that possibility, but I never said, you know, like they say oftentimes on the show, oh, that was definitely a Squatch.
Right.
You know, it was, and so he came out, looked at the car, like, well, thank goodness we're fully insured. And then I rousted Cliff, and then we got the rest of the cast to come down and got some cameras ready, and we were going to swab it for DNA. And, you know, because there were smears. There's smears on the front, definite smears on the mirror. And one of the cast members, and I'm not going to say her name, the cast member came over and rubbed their hand over the spots, like, oh, right here? Right here is where it hit? It's like, you just put your hand on the, we were just, really, scientist? We were just going to swab. Don't you know what's going on here, biologist, you know? And so that kind of ruins everything. You know, the DNA could have came back, you know. I shouldn't say anything. and then Moneymaker put out a tweet like, finding Bigfoot scout and Bigfoot investigator Tyler Bounds hits Sasquatch with car in Virginia. And of course, the Twitterverse blew up and the internet was inundated with all this.
Yeah.
And then I started getting texts and phone calls and emails. And then my producer, because this was still, you know, the early stages of the show when we were really trying to be kind of secretive about where we were and where we were filming, so we didn't get a bunch of people out there screwing with us. I mean, you know, in the early days, we couldn't even put, like, on Facebook, like, ooh, having a great time in, you know, Kansas or Connecticut or wherever, you know, because we didn't want, I guess we could say Connecticut, but not, you know, exactly where we were, because then people can track us down and come out in the woods and mess with us. So he kind of lost his mind when he's like, Moneymaker did what? He tweeted what? And then, you know, that was kind of a big deal. And of course, I was at the middle of that whole storm. And when I was like, you know what? I never said it was a Bigfoot. I never said Bigfoot. I said, you know, a nice down home Virginia gentleman and or, you know, drunken hillbilly, whatever. And, you know, but it kind of took off from there. And, you know, I'm still not going to say today that I hit a Bigfoot, but I hit something that was big and upright and standing in the middle of the road in a remote
and
corner
had,
of the state.
Feet.
Yeah.
It had
yeah.
Feet.
And it was, yeah, it was, I mean,
big,
it was big.
It had
and,
feet.
Yeah. And I went back the next day because I was pretty sick to my stomach about everything that had happened. I mean, I was still at that time thinking I'd hit a person. And then finally we had a lunch break, and then one of the PAs who went and got our meal came back and said, I called the two nearest hospitals and nobody was admitted last night. Nobody came in last night with a broken leg or broken anything. And, you know, so that really put me at ease, like, okay, well, at least it wasn't, you know, somebody who could make it to a hospital. And
yeah, right. some jerk in a minivan ran me down last night
and I, you know, I had to run off into the bushes. And then my producer and I went back down there in the daytime. I knew exactly where it was, and I marked the exact spot. And it was kind of interesting because there is a stream that goes right through there, which is why it was so foggy. And it's right in the bottom of this two really steep hillsides on either side of the road, fields on each side, you know, like pastures. And when we got down there, there was probably a dozen deer, you know, spread out on each side of the road through these pastures with this, you know, nice, big, wide, not really a river, but, you know, good-sized stream going through there. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, I could see why a Bigfoot would like this place, you know, because there's ample food, there's cover, there's, you know, all you have to do is, you know, run across this field and up that hillside and you're gone. And, but, you know, I belly crawled through a bunch of briars and going down little rabbit tunnels and just looking for, you know, in case something ran off the road and holed up in there. And, I mean, I got all scratched up. I got all dirty. I was, you know, spent my entire, you know, meal time, my lunch hour, you know, going down there. I'm like, there's nothing. I'm confident that there's nothing in these bushes, whatever was in here. I mean, I was looking for hair, you know. So to this day, I have no idea what it was. Could have been a Bigfoot, I guess, but I'm not going to go on the record as saying that, but I definitely had something, and it was definitely big enough to really screw up the car I was driving. And
yeah. Well, Tyler, there's a lot of questions in the chat room and whatnot. I'm being sent a lot of questions, but, you know, I guess I have to ask you first, you know, what are your thoughts on Bigfoot in general? Does Bigfoot exist, in your opinion, and do you have any opinion as to what it is?
In general, yes, I do. I do believe that there's something out there. You know, I've seen strange things. I've seen, you know, back in... wasn't too long ago that I would say, yeah, I definitely saw something, and it was a Bigfoot. I heard something, and it was a Bigfoot. I found these imprints, you know, they were way too far apart to be anything, you know, way up on a mountain in the snow, and these footprints are, you know, they're a foot and a half deep and 6 feet apart in the snow. It's definitely a Bigfoot. I've talked to a lot of people around the country. I've talked to hundreds and hundreds of witnesses, and a lot of time, I've learned that a lot of people, for one, don't really know what they're talking about when they're describing something out in the woods, you know? And I've really pulled myself back from, it was definitely a Bigfoot, or it was definitely right. Anything. Because, you know, most of the stuff happens at night. It's in the dark. You hear something. You don't know what it is. You're straining. The night vision that you're using is on the Fritz, you know, is flashing and blinking. And, yeah, I saw something, but, you know, could it be technical difficulties? Could it be my eyes being fried from, you know, looking through night vision for hours at a time? So I've really kind of pulled myself back from, you know, saying definitely this, definitely that. You know, that being said, I have, you know, recorded audio, I've found footprints, I've seen things out in the woods that weren't people. They weren't bears. They weren't, you know, it was upright. It was big. It looked at me. I looked at it, turned around, walked away, never saw it again. I've been, you know, I've talked to people all over the country. And, you know, a lot of time, a lot of the times, it's a misidentification, misinterpretation. But I've talked to other witnesses who break down in tears when they're recounting what happened to them. And when they say, I didn't want to see this, I didn't ask to see this, if I could go back in time, I would not want to see this. It gave me nightmares. It's ruined my life. I can't talk to anybody about it because of my job, because of my family, because of my beliefs, whatever. And so, I mean, there's definitely something out there that people have been seeing for millennia. I mean, hundreds and hundreds, generations, you know?
Yeah.
As to what it is, you know, I've always been on the relic hominid side of things and not the interdimensional portal space being from the 29th dimension, whatever, that's going to read my mind and then vaporize into thin air. So I'm definitely on the flesh and blood side of things. But yeah, I'm thinking relic hominid, you know, Gigantopithecus has been tossed out there a lot, but you know, that's just because that's what we have from the fossil record. And
right.
You know, my college learnings were paleontology is what I went to college for. So I know how scant the fossil record is, and just because we have this fossil doesn't mean this is the only thing that was there, you know, so Bigfoot has to be Gigantopithecus and not, you know, there's probably dozens of other things that weren't Gigantopithecus, which could be a Bigfoot, but we haven't discovered them yet. They weren't preserved, so on and so forth. So that's pretty much my stance on it.
So well said, because so many, I mean, the fossil record in general, it's so incomplete. It's actually ridiculous when people come out and, you know, even scientists say that this is the pattern, this is that, blah, blah, blah. The fossil record and known animals that existed at one point is minor. I mean, it's so incomplete, it's not even funny.
Extremely.
I mean,
just the chances for something to become fossilized is so remote. I mean, it has to be preserved, has to be buried immediately so it doesn't get molested by, you know, scattered by scavengers, so on and so forth. I mean, it has to be like a perfect storm just to get that one skeleton or part of a skeleton.
Well,
and,
even Gigantopithecus, look, how many, what do we have from Gigantopithecus? You know, jawbone, some teeth. Yeah, basically teeth, And so
that were dragged into caves by porcupines.
So what else is out there yet to be found, if found at all?
Exactly.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. One of the questions in our chat room was from a good friend, Bruce Kelly. He wanted to know, with all your traveling and experiences in regards to, you know, the Finding Bigfoot show, or just your travelings in general, you know, what are your thoughts on Bigfoot? Are you more convinced that it exists?
Not necessarily. 'Cause, I mean, I was already fairly convinced before. I was way more convinced before, actually. And like I said, I've kind of reined myself back after. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people, and I wish Cliff and I both discussed this at length. I kind of wish that at the very beginning we would have kept track of witnesses and you know, probability of what they saw being a victim. And, you know, so we could, I mean, it was a great opportunity to, you know, get like a percentile, to get data of, you know, I've talked to people who, I really think they saw something, experienced something. Then other people like, no, dude, that was an owl. That was a figment of their imagination. That was a shadow. That was a person. That was a hunter. I mean, you know, and or just misinterpretations or people, you know, and as the show went on, then it's just, you can tell when somebody wants to be on on television. Like they
right,
they tell a story, and you know, at the beginning it was all pretty innocent, and you know, people really wanted to, you know, had something to say, and it got harder to kind of weed those people out as the show went on, and which was, you know, part of my job is go talk to this person, tell us what you think, you know, are they for real, you know, and it, you know, it got pretty easy to tell, you know, no, they're full of it, or it was a coyote, or you know, any number of things, or they just want their, you know, 5 minutes of fame, and I was on Finding Bigfoot. And if anything, it's actually reined me in where, like I said, I'm more hesitant now to say anything, you know, prior to 2011. Oh, yeah, dude, I saw Bigfoot. I've seen a couple of them. I have audio recordings of Bigfoot. And now I don't even like saying that. Like, I recorded something. It's something I didn't see what was making. I didn't see what was making that noise, so I don't know what it was. You know, and so, and that's what, how you have to keep yourself. I mean, you know, if you didn't see it happen, you didn't see the Bigfoot hitting the tree with that, you know, chunk of wood that they apparently are always carrying around with them, since they can, you know, pick up a nice solid chunk of wood in the dark, in the middle of nowhere, and find a nice tree to whack it on without it breaking. And but, you know, you never see reports of, oh, yeah, the Bigfoot was carrying this big lunker chunk of wood,
yeah,
nice piece of hickory, and, you know, sitting on the tree. Like, you know, how do they even do that? So if anything, it hasn't lessened my belief, but it's definitely lessened my trust in other people's knowledge, perceptions, mm-hmm, and interpretations.
Well, thank you, Tyler. We're running up against the clock. We definitely should do.
I know. I do this every time. I never think I can fill up an hour, and then I blah blah blah, and it's like, oh, we're out of time. Like, man, I guess I did have something to talk about.
I guess you did.
Yeah.
And we didn't even get to what you're doing now, which is Pacific North Weird.
Yeah. Well, hey, there's always next weekend, guys. We can do a sequel.
Please. Please do, Tyler. You rock, man, and you're one of the honest guys out there, and the guys that I, when you have something to say, I listen to. And, yeah, we need to have you back on, like, ASAP.
Well, I'm, you know, I can do that. And, I mean, you guys are my friends. We've been out in the woods, done stuff in the woods. We've done, you know, things around the campfire that we won't speak of. And, you know. It's always a good time.
Clarify
and
that a little bit.
well, I mean, you know, good, you know, wholesome thing. Well, no, not wholesome. I'll have to think of a word. But,
okay,
you know, everything was legal for the most part.
All right. Well, we'll definitely take you up on having you back on here shortly. And as always, a pleasure, my friend. And you can actually, if folks, if you want to check out what Tyler's doing now, he's doing a show on YouTube called Pacific North Weird, and there's a YouTube channel, and the link is on our Facebook page. So check that out. I've watched some episodes of that, and it's entertaining, and they have a great sense of humor. Besides, they're checking out all the weird stuff in the Pacific Northwest, so check that out. We ran into Tyler and his crew up in at the Sasquatch Summit recently. So thanks, everybody.
And
for,
I think we interviewed both you guys, and we have a Bigfoot episode coming up pretty soon. So
very good.
Maybe let you guys know when that comes out, and maybe maybe I can come on then, come back on, and we can talk about all that nonsense.
Sounds good. Well, thanks again, everybody.
Right.
This is we'll be back next week with another episode of Monster X Radio. And until then, have a great week, and check out our Facebook group. Julie and Loriana are posting like crazy in there, so check out all the articles and stuff that we're posting. Thanks again. We're out.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
And, yeah, I'll definitely...